States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Melissa, would you please call roll?
Yes. Commissioner Church?
Here.
Commissioner DeSimone? Commissioner Brumbaugh?
Here.
Commissioner Goodwin?
Here.
Commissioner Richardson?
Here.
Commissioner Wright? Commissioner Gardner?
Here.
All right, seeing that we have five commissioners present, we do have a forum. We will take testimony cards from speakers. If you have anything that you would like to testify either for or against the proposed comp plan and zoning amendment tonight, please give your cards, fill out the testimony cards, and give them to our recording secretary if you haven't already. Have we received any testimony?
No, we have not.
Okay. All right. First thing I will do is I will read the procedures for following the judicial land use hearing. This meeting of the Josephine County Planning Commission will be conducted according to the Josephine County Land Use Hearing Rules found in Article 31 of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code and Section 197.763 of the Oregon Revised Statutes, which govern the conduct of all public hearings. A summary of the rules follows. The planning staff will identify and explain the criteria and standards applicable to this request. Testimony and evidence is to be directed to the criteria and standards. If you feel other criteria or standards apply and are not identified, you must raise the issue to the chair for a ruling. If the chair rules that additional standards apply, then testimony and evidence may be directed to them. Clearly raise and explain your issues in this hearing in order to be understood by the commission. Any participant who fails to raise an issue in the hearing, in person or by letter, with sufficient specificity to afford the hearing body an opportunity to respond to that issue, is precluded from using the issue in any subsequent appeal of the decision. This is called the raise or waive rule. Before the conclusion of the hearing, any participant may request a continuance to submit new evidence or testimony. The commission must decide to either grant the continuance or keep the record open. In either case, the period of time must be at least 7 days. During the time of the open record, anyone may submit additional written testimony or evidence. All persons testifying are considered a witness unless the person asks to be recognized as a party and the chair rules that the person has party status. Party status is established in three ways. One, anyone who receives official mailed notice and testifies orally or in writing at this hearing. Two, anyone who testifies orally or in writing at this hearing who did not receive official mail notice, but establishes that the use or enjoyment of their property is adversely affected by impact from this proposed use or development that is different from the public at large. And three, someone who is aggrieved by an adverse decision. The chair will wait until you finish testifying to make a ruling on your party status. Participants are obliged to know and follow the rules and procedures. The planning staff present has a copy of the rules. The first item on the agenda is as follows. A request to approve with conditions an amendment to the comprehensive plan map of Josephine County from forest to residential and to amend the zoning map of Josephine County from woodlot resource to rural residential 5-acre minimum. The application indicates that the subject property is non-forest land per soil and forest analysis. The subject property is identified in the Josephine County Assessor's Records as map 350611, tax lot 1600. The property owners are Donald and Danelle Marvin. Does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the commission to hear this matter? Does any member of the commission wish to abstain from this matter? The Josephine County Rural Land Development Code sets time limits for testimony. First, there will be a staff report, which is about 10 minutes. Then the proponent's case, the applicant will have 10 minutes to make their case. Any expert witnesses on behalf of the applicant have 5 minutes each. others in favor have 5 minutes each, and then they have 5 minutes to question the staff. Please direct questions to the chair. Then the opponents will have their time to make the case. If there is any representative of the opponents, that person will have 10 minutes. Any expert opposition witnesses will then have 5 minutes each. Then others in opposition will have 5 minutes each. And then there will be 5 minutes per question to the staff. Again, please direct questions to the chair. The applicant will then have the opportunity for an oral rebuttal of 10 minutes. If the applicant makes a rebuttal and if they raise new argument, issue, or evidence in their rebuttal, then the opponents may have a surrebuttal. The representative will have 5 minutes and others will have 5 minutes as well. The summation, the applicant or representative will have 5 minutes for summation, and if there is a representative of the opponent, they will also have 5 minutes for summation. At that point, the planning staff will review the applicable criteria, evidence submitted, and staff recommendations, and the planning commission will discuss the proposal and further question planning staff. At that point, the hearing will be closed, no more public testimony will be taken, and the commission will deliberate and make a decision. The criteria for the decision in this hearing to be represented by the planning staff as part of the staff report. James Black, please give the staff report.
Good evening. I'm James Black with the County Planning Office. I'm going to take us through the staff report. I have a PowerPoint presentation, and you all should have a copy of it. Okay. So we're here tonight to hear a comp plan zone change for Donald and Danielle Marvin, owners of property located at 670 South Schoolhouse Creek Road. We have Mr. Bob Park here this evening representing the applicant. Little background on the application that was submitted. Staff received a complete application for the zone change on March 12, 2013 to change the zone of tax lot 1600 from woodlot resource to rural residential. The importance here is that when we deem the application complete, in most other applications, there's a 150-day timeline. Because this is a comprehensive plan amendment, that rule does not apply in this case. So per ORS 215-427, the 150-day deadline does not apply to the final decisions on comp plan amendments. So the location of the property, as seen here on this map, we are out in the Merlin area, South Schoolhouse Creek Road. We have the I-5 corridor running up in the Merlin here. We have Monument Drive running north-south on this side. As mentioned, the zoning of the property is woodlot resource. It is located, we got some more woodlot resource to the north and to the south. And behind the property by the I-5 corridor. It abuts rural residential on the west side of the property. This is a 2002 aerial photo of the property. Just kind of gives you another general overview of the location. I believe the staff report contains a 2010 version or a photo that gives you a little better perspective on how it looks today as opposed to 2002. This slide shows the soils map. We know that soils are important in comp plan and zone change applications. We need to look at things, soil type, we have our IRR values to look at, agricultural farm soils to look at, and it plays an important role in your decision this evening. This property has basically one soil type, Brockman commonly clay loam. This soil type actually does not have an IRR value, so it's unrated. There is a different section in the code that we'll need to be looking at because the soil does not have an IRR value. what's called a combination of proofs. This soil has a class 6 agricultural rating, and the soil type, at least 12B, takes up at least 94% of this property. The topo map gives us an idea of how steep this property may be. This property is relatively flat. We do have this slide here. Also shows, we got some red hash marks up here. This is showing slopes greater than 15% up in these areas. We do not see any of that located here on this property. Section 46040 plan amendment review criteria. This section of the code basically provides what we need to look at to measure the slumming change against. If a change from resource designation to non-resource designation, we must meet the non-resource criteria in 4650, and I will get into that next. Important parts of this is we need to demonstrate carrying capacity. Can this zone change, will it be able to support adequate water, septic, and access to the area? And is this change consistent with the character of the surrounding area? Section 4650, we're moving into the non-resource criteria. We have several items to look at. First, is this property non-farmland? Does it have class 5 soil or above? That's what we're looking for in this application. Number two item is non-forest land. Is this property non-forest land? This is key in this decision tonight. Is there a soil CIR below 3.5? If there's no CR or an IRR value, then we have to use what's called a combination of proofs test. Next item we need to know is the land not necessary for future farm and forest practices. And the last item is the land not needed for soil, water, air, fish, and wildlife resources? An example I put it is Deer Winter Ranch. The next slide shows that this property is located outside of the Deer Winter Range areas. It's in an impacted area. So Deer Winter Range is not a factor in this application. The last item that we have here is a new OAR, not new, it's relatively new. The DLC informed the county that new AR revisions require a cubic feet productivity data from direct tree measurements for a non-forest finding. This rule must be applied under ORS. You will not find language in our code book because it has not been updated with this new language, but we still need to consider it. It still needs to be used in this land use decision. As such, the applicant is required to address both the county IR system, which I already said is, we don't have a rating, so we don't need to do that, and the cubic feet analysis for non-forest finding. I mentioned combination of proofs test. The code goes in and explains what that is. Basically, it's using the best information you can, using soil studies, using a forest study, to basically prove that this property is not non-forest, or prove that it's not forest land. With this new rule coming down, this rule actually requires Mr. Hart to do that same thing. So essentially, the combination of proofs test in our code is already here in this AOR. So if it meets the AOR, the combination of proofs is happy, and then we can move forward. So that's just a real quick run through of the staff report. I know Mr. Hart submitted Exhibit B, which is quite large. Hopefully, you've had time to go through that. Mr. Hart will move into this presentation. Before I do that, though, staff received a late email from the Department of Land Conservation and Development from Catherine Daniels. She's requested that this email be included into the record, and I get to be the man to do that this evening. I have copies of it right here. And basically, it's DLCD's comments into the record regarding this land use application. I'm going to let you guys read it. We received this around 3 o'clock today. I was actually here setting up when it came. So I haven't really got through it myself, but I need to get into the record. That's what they have asked for. So I'm going to pass this out to you right now. Questions regarding my staff report, I could step down and change over the PowerPoint to the overhead. If there's any more questions for me.
That's fine. Thank you very much. We now have 10 minutes for the applicant to make their case. Can you please state your name?
Thank you. My name is Bob Hartman, land use consultant representing Don Marvin, property owner. I know some of you commissioners and I haven't ever met, but to give you a short background, I'm a private consultant, land use planner. I was a county planner for Josephine County for 17 years before I became a private consultant on the outside representing property owners. I was involved in the adoption of the original comprehensive plan. I was the liaison with Larry Brown, the forester that developed the IRR system. So I worked directly with him to develop that system to identify forest land for Josephine County. I retired from the county in the year 2000, so I've been as a private consultant since then. In this case, the request is for a comprehensive plan amendment and zone change from woodlot resource to RR5. It's provided for in the code because there are a number of parcels that we didn't go down to that level of specificity when we adopted the original comprehensive plan. There was provision made that if people would bring in specific information, they can make a request and have it considered by the county for adoption to place zoning that would more appropriately reflect what the property's really capable of. In this case, it's basically split into two halves of the equation. One is the non-resource determination. Is this suitable for farm or forest uses? The other part is the carrying capacity of the land. Will it really support the density that's being proposed? In this case, we'll try and deal with the carrying capacity quickly because I think it's fairly simple and straightforward. There's three basic parts to carrying capacity: wells, septic suitability, and roads. Wells in this area are quite good. The average is 27.65 gallons per minute. On the subject property, there's a 50-gallon a minute well. There hasn't been any wells drilled in the area since 2009. I didn't find any record of any wells being deepened to show that there's been a degrading of the water levels in that area. In your packet, there's also a letter to show that it meets the quality standards, that it's a good drinkable water. So we feel that there's adequate water to serve this area at this density. Next is septic suitability. There's two ways you can approach it. One is to go have septic site evaluations for each potential lot. The other is to have a soil scientist review the soils and give his professional opinion, is it suitable for individual septic systems. In this case, we had Dennis Hutchison, the certified soil classifier, allowed him to look at the property. We took a backhoe out and dug numerous test holes throughout the property. He looked at those holes, and his conclusion is in the report in Exhibit B that I gave him. His conclusion is the soil is suitable for individual septic systems at a 5-acre density. The roads are a little bit more complex. In this case, Schoolhouse Road, when we first started this project, everybody assumed, because of the official records of Josephine County, that it was a public usage road. When we got further into it, we found out that it was never declared a public road. We had to go to court and had a judge of competent jurisdiction declare this to be a public road, most of it having a 60-foot wide right-of-way, a 40-foot wide right-of-way through the cemetery. So we contacted the cemetery and asked them would they be willing to dedicate additional roadway if necessary to enlarge the road to meet county standards. There's a letter in the file that shows their acquiescence, saying that they would agree to do this additional dedication because it's along the side of the cemetery. Part of the road, it showed that there was two small ownerships, and everybody assumed those to be burial plots. We tried to see what we could find out, and we didn't find any records that specifically said they were burial plots. Public Works said that they would not deal with the public road if there was any possible chance of a burial site within the road right-of-way. So we redesigned the road, talked further with the cemetery people, and they agreed to a realignment. And they also worked with the road department so we could get a proper intersection with Monument Drive. There's a letter in the file that Public Works says it does now sound feasible to improve the road. This is the only access into the property to serve that area. There was a larger street network proposed for property to the south of the subject property, and I'll deal with that in just a minute. When we look at the non-resource determination of this property, there's two tests that need to be done. One is it farmland. That's a fairly straightforward issue. If it's class 1 through 4 soils, based on the soil survey, then it is farmland and it cannot be changed. In this case, all of the soils on the subject property are class 6 soils, so it does not meet the state definition of forest land. We looked at surrounding properties. There are no farm uses on adjoining or nearby properties, so it would not adversely impact any type of farm use in the area. Next, we looked at the forestry potential of the property. In this case, there is no internal rate of return, and that system is used to try and determine if there would be a positive cash flow, considering what the cost of harvest would be versus the cost or the income from the harvest of the trees. That's what the internal rate of return determines. In this case, there is none because the old Soil Conservation Service did not define this as forest land. We always assumed that it just was not forest land. There was a couple of appeals to the LUMA, and it says if the comprehensive plan didn't specifically state that it's not forest lands, then we couldn't just make that assumption. That's where we came up with a combination of proofs. In this case, the combination of proofs also is in conformance with the new administrative rules that the state adopted to require actual productivity on the property if information is not available. We went to the new web survey from the NRCS. It's based on the old SCS maps. There's nothing in the new adopted NRCS soil survey that shows any productivity on this property. Next, we had to look at the Department of Revenue records to see if there was something there. And in this case, The Department of Revenue records are not site-specific. They're just broken down into a grid of quarter sections, and then they give it a FG rating if it's between 50 and 84 cubic feet per acre per year productivity. We looked at the site and said we do not feel that that is an accurate representation of what this property is actually doing. There is a provision in the OAR that allows us to go do a specific site evaluation by doing a boring of the trees, having a professional forester do an evaluation where he bores the trees to check the age, checks the circumference, height of the trees to get what actual productivity is there. When he went out there and visited the site and generated a report dated January 15, 2013, he found that out of the almost 40 acres, only 4.34 had any merchantable trees. So he drilled those, looked at it, said that over 90% of the site, or almost 90% of the site, does not have tree capability. So when you average it for the cumulative mean annual increment, it comes out at 8.47 cubic feet per acre, based on the entire site. There is no state standard that sets what the actual minimum is. There's been a couple of LUBA cases, and they said clearly if you're above 85 cubic feet per acre, it's definitely forest land. If you're below 20, you're definitely not. Somewhere between 20 and 85, we're not sure. You have to prove that on a case-by-case basis. In this case, with it at 8.47 cubic feet, we felt that it did not meet the test to be commercial forest land. The soil classifier confirmed that, as well as the forester, when he looked at it. His conclusion was based on these observations, and this is in the soil report in your handbook. He says the site index, based on these trees, would yield less than 20 cubic feet per acre for Douglas fir. And he also noted that the tree boles tapered quickly, the tree diameters were small for their age, and they looked to be in poor health. That's probably because of the soils.
Mr. Hart, your 10 minutes are up. How many more minutes do you need to finish
here? I should be able to wrap this up in less than 5 minutes. Probably two or three.
Okay, let's give him 3 minutes.
Sure.
Okay, no, 3 more minutes.
I guess the only thing that I really have to cover on forestry is, will this have any adverse impact on forestry uses in the area? The property directly to the north is a 40-acre piece from the Bureau, owned by Bureau of Land Management. They do not have that in their harvest schedule. The only thing they have for management of that property is reduction of forest fuel or to mitigate any possible wildfire. That's the only thing that BLM plans to do with that property. The other significant property, I guess, would be the area to the south. There's about 120 acres to the south of this property, owned by the Feinbergs and Blackburns. And the reason I know this so well is in 2007 and 2008, under Measure 37, we proposed a subdivision in that area to create 5-acre lots based on the Measure 37. We looked at that and found out that there was no forestry potential on that property as well. And in the board's findings, when they did approve it, the board, this is from the Board of County Commissioners' findings of fact, dated July 23rd, 2008, says, board finds the evidence in the record from Mr. Johnson, an expert in forestry matters, and testimony from Dennis Hutchison, a certified soil classifier, and testimony from Bob Hart, with over 30 years experience in land use evaluation, including 17 years with the county, that they were expert analysis of the application. It's substantial and credible, and is more convincing than testimony and opposition. And the board finds that the property is non-resource in character, and that state goal 4 does not apply to that property. So there's really no potential to the south. It's all residential to the west and going to the east. There's the freeway. So there's no real resource management in the area. We feel that this would meet the burden of proof to show that it's non-resource for both farm and forest uses. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Harden.
Thank you.
Any questions?
My question was, as I went through the resource impacts, I noticed that the 50 gallons a minute were data from 1975, and I just wondered, it seems like a closer average, page 8, that it looks like more recent data, 2012, more like 27 gallons a minute.
The 27 is the average for the area, it's not for the property.
Do you have any more current data for the property?
With the well working properly, I didn't see any need for it. And then when I reviewed the well logs and that's included in your packet, I looked at all the well logs and none of them are left. I think there's about 3 of them out of all the 54 wells that were below 10 acres in size or 10 gallons a minute. Most of them were 40 and 50 gallon a minute wells. There's no deepenings or showing of any kind of well failure in the area, so we didn't feel that it was necessary to show that we needed anything else.
I think it would make a lot of sense to look at the current data to see if the assumption of 50 gallons per minute is one data point.
Before the property is divided, there will be another requirement that we have to show water again during the subdivision review. At that point, we can verify that it meets anything in a current test. We could do that, but I don't feel that it's necessary now to show that it's not in a documented water problem area. We feel that there is adequate water in the area to support the intended use. Mr. Shirk.
Yes, Mr. Shirk. Thank you. I was having a little bit of a hard time understanding the road. Maybe it was in here, but I couldn't see what the current road is, the condition of it, and what the proposed road is going to be.
The current road is shown to be just on the county maps. It shows that there is a public road in there.
Right.
The court declared that road to be the actual alignment.
I was actually looking for the condition. What is the,
the condition, it's currently an unimproved, well, it's improved by having a travel surface that people drive back and forth on. It is not paved, and that will be a requirement of the development of the property that we do paving to get all the way out to the public road. We work very closely with the Public Works Department to show that it is feasible and practical to make that happen. So it will have to be improved to meet county standards before any further development of the subject property.
County standards to a paved road.
To a paved two-lane road.
That's all I wanted to see, and I just couldn't quite see it in the paperwork.
Thank you,
Mr.
Commissioner Richardson?
Yes. Excuse me, Commissioner
Richardson.
Explain to me again about the burial site and the Neely children. I think it was, they're identified by name.
That's from talking with the cemetery people. They said that's who they think are buried in those two sites, but they weren't sure.
Have you got some way to show us what that looks like on the map, either on an overhead or something, where those are?
Okay. Look at page 64, which is the zoning map. You can follow the road that goes out, and it just north of where it intersects with Pleasant Valley. You can see the road that goes out to the right, just about in the middle of the page. There's two small squares, one on the north edge of the road and one on the south edge of the road.
So the road goes between the two sites?
Yes, it does.
And Mr. Hart, I think that is also shown on page 151 as well.
C2?
Yeah, I show something on 151. It looks like it really says.
Okay. In this, on exhibit C2, this is the alignment that we proposed and worked out with Public Works that shows the realignment of the road to go south of the proposed, as part of the development, where it will be south of the grave site, so nothing will be disturbed whatsoever.
What page is that on?
C12.
I think it's in your staff report.
Oh, it's in the C2. Okay, all right, I got it.
Can you put that on the overhead for us to see?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, so there, in your staff report, here's the original, or the existing alignment through here where the grave sites are on either side of the existing right-of-way. When we first talked to Public Works, that the actual improvement area would go between the two graves, they said they didn't want that in the right-of-way whatsoever, so we talked to the cemetery people and brought the road down to the south so it would avoid those grave sites completely, so they will not be disturbed whatsoever. Any other questions?
Any further questions on the... Well, since that's the only egress for people on School Road, unless they go under the freeway, is disrupting that going to cause those people not to have the ability to get out of their properties while this is happening?
We'll try and work with the people to make sure that any construction, because it's graded now and people travel that, so if we realign that down to the south, we can still use the old alignment while that's being constructed.
Any further questions from the commission?
Thank you, Mr. Hart.
You're welcome.
Does the applicant have any expert witnesses at home?
No.
All right. We will now take comments from others in favor. Do we have any testimony cards? Have a testimony card, but it does not say whether it's in favor or opposed. Ron and Lori Moniz, are you in favor?
Opposed. Or okay. Neutral. Neutral to opposed.
Okay, then we'll wait for the next.
Being late and I didn't fill out, can I be someone that's for it?
Yes.
Okay, is it time to speak for that?
Yes, now is the time. Are you finished? Do you have time to finish filling out your form?
I'm trying really quick.
Okay. And your name is?
Robert King.
Robert King.
King. I live at 910 South Schoolhouse Creek Road. My favor for this, that this is happening, is I've lived up there for several years. I've lived up there for 17 years. In that 17 years, we do not have an adequate way of leaving our property if there's a fire. just on the other side, on the drive coming up. None of us can leave. There's no way we can get out. The road isn't big enough for fire equipment to get in, number one, for us to even get out while it's there. This is the first improvement that I've had heard of widening our road. Our road is, it's a dirt road. I mean, and it's not adequate. I mean, we have to stop and turn out areas for us to get by for one another that live on this road. My family plot on that he was showing the go-around, the Trimble plot is my family plot there because I was concerned about this expansion. The way they're bringing the road around the graves isn't going to interfere with any of the graves, so I'm really happy to see that. And it's also going to bring it a little better for less congestion down at the end, too. As we're coming down it, next down so tight, it's dangerous right there where the grave sites are. If someone's coming, you can almost get hit if someone's coming up. So the improvements that's going to happen with this is going to just be our safety of us living on that road. Because right now, I was to improve, and I have for fire standards. But like I asked them, I said, who's liable for the standard if we can't get out? Is the county liable for our properties? I mean, we cannot get out at all if there's a fire. I mean, we can go on the other side of the freeway, but there's no actual out over there. And we have to go through someone's property to actually get out. And he's got to unlock the gate. I mean, there's really nothing there. And my property lies right here. And getting out, I mean, I'm sure, you know, most of the people who live there don't want this to happen because they're afraid of people coming up, more traffic. But I think about it, if we can't get out when there's a fire, and as much fire as there has been, I think it's a well worth cause. And it really isn't going to hurt development, what he's going to do. I mean, the biggest issue he's having is because it's going to develop, people are worried about having more people up the road. Guess what? There's more people here all the time. Good spot to develop, good in location.
Thank you very much, Mr. King.
Thank you.
Please.
Just a quick question. Does that road go under the freeway? Or
yes,
is
it
just
does.
The
no,
freeway?
No, it goes under the freeway and it goes to some more properties. If you look at the road there, goes up to three more properties up above.
Okay.
And those people use the same road.
And it doesn't connect to another road.
There's
just dead ends over there.
There's no exit for us once you get up that road. You're stuck.
Gotcha.
It doesn't come out at Red Mountain Golf Course?
No, that's on the other road. That's on the other side. It doesn't connect at all.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm curious, how many people would you say are living at risk of fire down that one narrow road?
Like everybody that's above the cemetery.
Is
I
it
mean,
more
if
than
they call
10 people?
Oh, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 residents above. 8?
11.
Okay.
Above.
That's
yeah. That are risk for fire, for sure.
And then the fire trucks can't get to those cars.
If there's cars come out, it'll be a traffic jam. And it's like the odds of us getting out. Yeah, we can maybe make it out, but if they're bringing fire equipment, there's no way. We'd be stuck.
Any further questions for Mr. King? Thank you, Mr. King. All right, one more chance. Any other people who want to testify in favor?
I live on Schoolhouse Road. I didn't get a card. You have to have a...
Yes, you'll have to fill out a card, and then you'll have to approach the podium and state your name and address. Can someone provide the gentleman the card? If there's anybody else who would like to testify, either in favor or opposed, please obtain a card, a testimony card now and fill it out. Thank you. Sir, if your wife is filling out the card, you may approach the podium once again. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Richard Morstead, and I live at 611 Schoolhouse Road.
Richard, could you please spell your last name?
Morstead. Richard Morstead.
M spell.
M-O-R-I-S-S-E-T.
Thank you.
And I'd just like to say that I'm for the project. I don't have any other comments other than I'm for it.
We're new to the area.
And where do you live in relation to the project?
This one right here. We have 22 acres there, I think.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Mr. Morstead? Thank you, Mr. Morstead. Okay.
any questions for staff by the applicant?
No.
All right. Then let's move on to opponents. Is there any official representative of the opponents? All right. Then there are no expert witnesses for the opposition. Then let's now have a testimony from Ron and Lori Moniz. Which one of you would like to testify?
I will.
Okay. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Lori Moniz, and our address is 553 Potsway. Me and my husband have lived up there 25 plus years. So we've lived on Potsway when we were the only house on Potsway. When we moved up there, the water table was probably about 18 gallons per minute. So when I hear of 50, I haven't heard of any other wells up there. So behind us is the 80 acres, and then the property we're talking about is to the right of that. So they're not touching, but they're fairly close. So my concern would be another seven homes, however many homes that come up there, the water tables. We've seen a drop since we've lived there over the 25 years. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but starting with 18, you don't want to go down too much. And we have 5 acres there. And we have probably similar soils as the property that we're talking about. And I don't know if they're forest lands or not. It grows stuff pretty good. But the next concern that I would have would be just the breaking up the large chunks of property that the wildlife are there. You know, we get deer and all kinds of wildlife. And I can see, since all the other homes have moved in next to us, you know, on Potsway, that the animals keep, you know, getting less and less land. So that's always a concern for me. And the other one would be the road access. I was concerned about that. I don't live on South Schoolhouse Creek, so I don't know their situation. My concern is the graves that are very next to the road. I don't know if any of you guys have been up there, but they're really close. And I know that they're working on trying to avoid those, but I think that's a really, really important issue. Maybe some more homework and studies should be done. There's some really old graves in there. I have family in there, so I think that's a really important thing to address, not quickly, but yeah, to make sure they're not getting paved over. So, and that's just about, I guess, all that I'm concerned with. So I wouldn't say that I'm totally opposed for it, but I'm definitely neutral to opposed. I think we're somewhere in the middle on this. So those are concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you. What is you said your well pressure has dropped. What is it now?
You know, we haven't had it tested, but 25 years ago, we were at 18. 18, and I can notice it. There's definitely a fluctuation. Like I say, on Potsway, we were the only home, so since in 25 years, we've had an addition of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 homes just surrounding us. The BLM is the buffer from between our property and the freeway there. So, and I know that there's other big chunks next to the BLM, and they usually do that for a reason, to keep so the wildlife have a large area. But I'm not 100% on what our gallons per minute are. I just know they used to be 18. So the 50, I don't know anybody up there who's getting the 50. So, and I'm concerned that ours would drop lower with that many more homes. So that's a concern.
Thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Cummings?
Uh-huh.
Yes, Mr.
Church. Would you mind pointing to your property on that map that's on the overhead there? Just so I can see the relationship.
Let's see, we are right here.
Oh, okay, so that's off, you said it's off another road.
Well, it's Potsway.
Potsway
and used to be Schoolhouse Creek. Potsway goes to a certain point, and then that turns to North Schoolhouse Creek.
Okay.
With no reminder except for a cul-de-sac. So you have South Schoolhouse Creek on this side and North Schoolhouse Creek. We're in the middle of the two of those, basically.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Cummings? Thank you, Mr.
Cummings.
Sir?
I don't have any question at all. It'll be real quick.
Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me. In order to testify, you have to fill out a testimony card. And
okay, but it would be better I shared just one honest fact.
That's fine, but you still have to. The card is very simple. It's just your name.
My name is Todd Allen McGuire. I live in South Man. I was a real estate broker for 18 years over in Seven Falls, Oregon.
Okay.
I know a lot about zoning.
Sir, excuse me. You're not being heard because you have to speak into the microphone to be on the record because it can't hear you.
I usually you hear me without one that I can.
But please, but yes, and be on the record. You have to fill out a card. It's only your name and address. That's all that's required, but we have to have that for the record.
I don't know how many properties I own here.
Several.
My name is Todd Allen McGuire.
But we do need you to fill out a testimony card. Are you in favor of or opposed to this proposal?
But I don't know. Where's the card?
Back here on the table right out here.
It's already sorry, I didn't. It's an important fact that we need to know.
It's a very simple card to fill out. We just. It's the state law that everybody who testifies have to have their name and address on the record.
If you want. I need your name and your address and your phone number if you got them.
Oh, and name, G-O-D. Cell phone, address, unknown. Unknown.
That's not going to work for us.
Okay, that is the legal name. I am God. And I had an important fact to share with you as all.
Thank you, Governor, but we can't take that money back.
Okay, it was specifically for this meeting for you, Council, and the group to help.
We would be happy to hear it, but we must follow state law. Thank you. All right. Any further people who would like to testify in opposition? Any questions for the staff from the opponent? All right, then the applicant has 10 minutes for a rebuttal. Oh, excuse me, sir.
Yeah, I live about right next to
Have you?
I've come up before, but yeah. I just want to say one quick thing about water.
Okay.
My name's Robert King. I live at 910 South Schoolhouse Creek Road. I've lived there for 18 years. I have 37 gallons a minute, and it hasn't varied any in the 18 years that I've been there. There's a water flow that comes under from the mountain through the freeway. It comes right through my property, and it goes and it runs down this other property of Marvin's. There's a ton of water that comes through during the winter. I've never had a fluctuation in my well at all in those 18 years that I've been there.
Thank you. All right, do we have a rebuttal for the applicant?
I don't know that there's much in the way of rebuttal. We have one testimony in opposition, and I think it was probably well addressed by an adjoining property owner in that he's not had any water issues in the 18 years he's been there. I do think that there may be some issue as far as water connectivity here, as I've attended Vineyard Fellowship for a number of years. North Schoolhouse Creek Road is level here as you exit Monument Drive, and it climbs and it goes up here. There's probably a 50 to 60 foot difference in elevation between the property from the folks that were concerned about their water. And looking at the soil maps, their property is split between two different soils, so I think they're right on the edge of two different soil types. I still don't know that it would be an issue that it would affect their well. And as far as the other things that have been mentioned, I think one of the concerns has been fire. And the improvement of the road would definitely improve the fire situation here to get people out. It is a single lane dirt road. We've worked closely with the cemetery to make sure we're not going to affect their property and also not cut into that side slope there, so it's not going to have a significant impact as far as the grading of the area. When we're down there on South Schoolhouse Creek Road, that's all level land or very low sloping, probably less than 5%. I've been up and down the road numerous times over the years. There is no connectivity between South Schoolhouse Road and any of the other. If you go up North Schoolhouse Road, that's where it connects to Red Mountain Golf Course. So they have that on the north side. I think in the case of emergency, Some people have talked about trying to go down through the firing range, but it would be cross-country without any benefit of any easements or anything, but that's the only safe egress to get out of there on the other side of the freeway. And the improvement of this to a two-lane road would definitely provide for two-way traffic in case of an emergency. I mentioned this property down here to the south that was approved for a subdivision before the Measure 37 was repealed and went to Measure 49. There was a proposal to connect South Schoolhouse Creek Road to Timber Lane. I don't remember if you were part of that, Mr. Church. Were you on the commission?
I don't remember that, Mr. Arthur. You know, sometimes I face.
Like I said, it's been a number of years. It's been almost 10 years since that one went through.
Oh, I've been there. I've been on that one.
Okay. But that was the proposal, was to connect Timber Lane. And if we ever develop this property to the south, like I said, we made the finding that it was not resource in character, but without the Measure 37, the people were from out of state and they didn't want to go through the comp plan zone change to try and complete the project. But I think that would definitely help. But this is the first leg of trying to get some adequate access to serve that area.
Thank you. Ms. Richardson. Tell me again what you're doing for that road.
It's
right now, it's what, about a lane and a half dirt road, maybe some gravel?
It's graveled, it's in dirt. It's a lane to a lane and a half as you go past the cemetery. It's more narrow. It's a little bit wider when you're out closer to Monument Drive. It narrows as you go past the cemetery, and then it widens out a little bit. And on a good day, it would be a lane and a half. It's probably a lane to a lane and a quarter. As part of the proposal for development, it will be a fully paved two-lane road. Mr. Marvin has talked to the Copeland to see what it would take to improve that roadway. But that's the discussions we've had with Public Works, is the improvement to a two-lane paved road.
Thank you. Commissioner Church?
Yes, Ms. Carmen, just a quick question. Does the road improvement end at the proposed property, or does it continue on to the end of wherever Schoolhouse Lane ends?
As a part of our project, we would not be doing any off-site past the Marvin property. We would improve it from here out to Monument Drive, which is significant off-site improvement. If the rest of the neighbors would like to join in and extend it, maybe we can try and help reduce the cost by having everything marshaled and done at the same time instead of trying to do it piecemeal. But our responsibility for off-site is to get us to Monument Drive. And that would be a great help. As you can see, it's more than half of the length of the roadway to get out to that point.
Any further questions from commissioners? Thank you, Mr. Hunt. All right, we don't have a representative of the office for a server rebuttal, but if you would like to make any further comments, you may do that.
Hello, Lori Moniz again. Well, my concern, like I said, I live on Schoolhouse Creek Road, so these may not be my issues, but it seems like a fire is an issue and they're coming out of there. It seems the more people you add, the more difficult that's going to be. And looking at this map now, I'm seeing that across the property, there's a lot of other larger pieces of property. So I'm just curious if maybe some people I'd be in favor of this, because once that road is put in, then they could divide more of what's up there. I'm looking at the yellow pieces across the road, and that's something I definitely would oppose. So I'm not sure if this would open up to more division of more land, larger chunks of land.
Thank you. All right. We have a summation.
Again, for the record, Bob Hart. The request is for a comprehensive plan amendment based on the determination that the property is non-resource in character, that it's not farmland, and it's not forest land. We've provided expert testimony in the record from a professional forester and a certified soil classifier to show that it is not resource land. We've described the surrounding uses, and there are no other resource uses in the area that would be adversely impacted. The code says we can go to RR5 or Serpentine or limited development. If we tried either the Serpentine or limited development, it would be considered spot zone because there's no other zoned lands on adjoining properties. The adjoining land is RR5. We've shown through the documents before you what the neighborhood is like. This is a map out of your packet. On page 68, it shows if this property is developed, it would be consistent with the existing pattern for the area. We describe the uses and feel that it is compatible and consistent with the area. We have no control over what happens on the far side of the freeway. I've looked at that and I doubt that there would be any kind of improvement or development to the far side of the freeway as a result of this. The access under the freeway is not able to be expanded. It's a single lane box culvert that goes underneath the freeway. It is the choke point that there would be, I would be concerned about trying to do any development on the far side of the freeway. And I don't think that they could meet the standards to show that there's adequate access on the far side of the freeway, unless you connect it to the north or to the south. With the water that's shown in the well logs for the area, we feel that it meets the standards that are required by code. It will be reviewed at least one more time when an actual development of the property comes in to buy the property. We would have to show at that time again that it has adequate water and adequate site evaluations for septic systems. As at the subdivision, we're required to put in a site evaluation for each lot and show that there is water to serve each lot. We feel that there isn't a real question that it would be not meeting code standards. So we feel that we've met all the burden of proof. We haven't seen anything that would change our mind of why this should not be done, and we feel it would be a betterment to the area by providing better access in case of emergency. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Hart? Thank you for the question.
I'm assuming you've seen this letter as well, or this email from Catherine Daniels.
I was handed that just before the meeting.
They apparently, for a variety of reasons, including fire safety and also habitat, recommended those be 20-acre parcels. The question that I have is, you're committed to a fairly significant road improvement. I'm not sure two parcels makes it viable.
No, two parcels would not make this cost effective to where that road would be improved. There's just no way that it could pencil out.
Unless the neighbors all banded together and improved their own road.
That would be the only way that it could be done. Now, we've looked at critical habitat in the area. It is committed and impacted. It is not critical deer habitat. There are no significant wildlife inventories that show that there's anything here that would be impacted. Or be detrimental, so that it's not like there's heron or osprey or any of the endangered species that would be impacted. And like I said, the critical deer habitat has already been shown to be impacted, and so it is not considered a wildlife issue for this area.
I appreciate the careful detail that went into your soils work, pardon me. And I'm familiar with those cobbly loams. I have a chance to work with them before. And as a, I noticed that that kind of soil tends to have ability to move when it rains. If it's been disturbed come fall, it's pretty mobile kind of soil. And I just wonder if, do you think that the layout of the development that you're proposing would take into consideration such things as stormwater and not degrading this, the water quality from the land coming off here? Do you, does that figure in the subdivision design?
Yes, that will, that is part of the subdivision design to make sure that we do not increase runoff through large impervious surface areas. There is a seasonal creek in there that we'll be looking at to see if we can channel anything through there. We cannot increase any runoff more than 10% of the entire project, so we don't feel that there's going to be any adverse impacts as far as stormwater.
And just one last question. Do you think this is the kind of approach that will be removing some of the canopy to make room for the houses, or was there a strong commitment to protect tree canopies?
Well, there's only 4 acres that has any significant tree canopy. The rest of it is pretty much ceanothus, a little bit of scrub oak.
Flammable stuff.
Yeah, some pretty flammable stuff. So when we go in there, there is a fire plan that's in here to show that there will be adequate fuel reduction around any structures, making sure any of the driveways and access to structures would meet the wildfire standards of Article 76. So all of that will be taken into account. I've done a lot of projects over the years, and it's been my experience that we try and leave as many of mature virginal trees as possible. Not only does it make the site more stable, but it also improves the quality of the project because you have instant landscaping. Because if you just go in and strip it down bare, then you do have erosion and you normally don't have anything that's as aesthetically pleasing. Just wash my mouth, I can't talk. Yeah, the aesthetics of the project to maintain the trees is quite valuable to us.
Any further questions for Mr. Hall?
Thank you,
Mr. Hall. All right, at this point, the planning staff will review the applicable criteria evidence submitted and or staff recommendations. Do you have anything to say?
I'll say a few things. So I thought I'd come up and there's been a lot of talk about water, and I just want to come up and make a general statement to remind us we do have a water standards section in our code, and just to apprise you of what we consider good water or bad water areas. Under Article 84, we basically have two guidelines that we use. The first one is if you're going to share a well, we want to see at least 5 gallons per minute per dwelling that well will be using. So if you have seven homes on a piece of property, we're looking for one shared well, at least 35 gallons per minute. So that's our first guide. The second one is if we're not sharing wells, an individual well, we like to see at least 3 gallons per minute for a period of 4 hours in the test. So we're hearing 18, 19, we're hearing some pretty substantial numbers as far as what the wells are around the area. So first, I just wanted to remind us, those are the guidelines we have in our code book that we use on a daily basis. And also, I just want to, for your motion this evening, we're gonna make a recommendation to the board. You're not making the final decision on this zone change. Just to make that clear to our audience behind us. If there's any more questions of staff, we'll be over there for you.
Any questions for staff? Thank you very much, Mr. Black. At this point, we will close the hearing, and the planning commission will deliberate and make a decision. Once the hearing is closed, from the audience. No more comment from the audience. We will discuss it during our discussions. Each commissioner must make a finding, and then we will recess for 5 minutes so that somebody can make a motion and bring that back, and then we will take a vote on that. So that's where we are now. And let's discuss what we have just heard. Would anybody like to begin the discussion? Commissioner Church?
This is the old timer here. Yes, I read the report last week, and I listened to the testimony here this evening, and it appears to me that this application meets all of the goals of the comprehensive plan, the policies, and the criteria of the land use ordinance, rural zoning code. I just can't see anything that would tell me otherwise that this is probably a pretty good project, and possibly, as we've even heard from the neighbors, an improvement because of the road improvement, which, although I recognize that there are issues with improving a road, can mean more traffic, and we're talking, I think, seven homes additional here, so that's pretty minimal. It's not like, and it's a dead end road to start with. It's not a through street, so there's no matter what happens, it's just like the best of all worlds. You have a nice paved dead end road. The traffic and fire protection seems like it would improve. Let me see if I had anything else I wanted to say here. It just appears that the wells are good. You never know about septic, but there's always ways to do that with sand filters and stuff like that if everything doesn't test out. But it sounds like they did a job at least trying to look at that. Forestry, it's clearly, in my opinion, not a forestry based on what I've read from the reports and from professional foresters. In regard to the letter from the state, I actually don't have a clue what they're talking about. We have in place Article 76, it's Article 76, I believe, and this staff, correct me if I'm wrong, but this whole thing would be applicable. Article 76, I mean, there's just, yeah, it would all happen. Not to mention the subdivision ordinance and everything else, so.
Could you explain what you mean?
Article 76? Well, that's the wildfire section of the rural code, and it deals with all the things that homeowners and sub-developers have to do to make sure that their properties are fire safe. So anyway, the wildlife thing, I have a hard time. Where was the other one? Wasn't there something in there about wildlife too?
Yes, there was.
Yeah, there was. I just think it's a good project, and I think it's all the goals, policies, and criteria, and standards that we have in place.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Thank you. Who else would like to speak next? We all, let me remind you, we all have to state our findings. So, if nobody wants to go next, I'll just have to go down the line. Commissioner Richards.
Well, I was kind of curious. There's this split because the commentary from the wildlife people said, please, leave all the breaks, leave all of the deadfall, leave everything on your 5-acre tracts for the wildlife. And then the fire management people come along and say, get rid of everything. Clean up your property. So we have this conflict that exists. And I find that curious because who do you get to believe at this point in fire season? We're all very, very nervous about fire, so our first thing is to go out and clear our land. That's one thing that seems to be divided. The other thing is I spent a little time with Goal 14 because if that's the one that talks about preserving our open spaces, and I have been told by the people in Salem that Josephine County is one of the worst examples of the county developing faster in the outlying areas, and that our zoning density is not high enough around our cities and our unincorporated towns. That becomes my concern, is if you look at Monument Drive and you look at the development that's occurring along Monument Drive, it's becoming a strip mall. If you look at what's happening along Merlin Galise, they are developing in a way where you have all of the traffic coming down one road. So you're creating traffic congestion. So when you're dealing with fire, or you're dealing with other things, you have a problem. And that's the part that concerns me. I understand that it's probably not forest and that it's not farmland, but are we operating against our basic understanding of the zoning principles for the state when every time a 40-acre parcel comes up, we say, hey, go ahead, put it in 5-acre tracts? Because then I think you can strangle yourself with 5-acre tracts. It's very difficult to get services to them once cities come that way. And I know the city of Grants Pass has seen that with the 2- and 3-acre tracts. They're not big enough to develop into commercial enterprises, and yet they're too pricey for people to pay for the water and the sewers and the stuff that has to happen to them. So that's my concern with any of these projects, and probably why I would vote no. Thank you.
Who would like to speak next? Commissioner Gardner.
I'm the newest member of the commission, still getting the hang of
that. Actually, Commissioner Brumbaugh can even do it.
Good to know.
You're an old hand now. I'm already an old hand. Meeting number two. Let's see. As the commissioner who spoke before me is
Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you for your comments. I am from Cave Junction and had the opportunity this summer to be present when we had a fire very close to downtown Cave Junction that started at the mill, and this fire went. It was in August. You can imagine how we had the most dynamite, Cracker Jack, volunteer fire state district. But then they jumped right on it, and they prevented this fire from sweeping through an area of about 150 single homes on 5-acre tracts. And it turns out that if the fire had moved through that Kenrose neighborhood, if our volunteer firefighters had not been so absolutely on top of it, heroes, every one of them, we could have had 150 homes burn up. And there actually is only one ingress, egress for that community on Kenrose. And they've been talking about they should really get another road through, because there actually would be no way for the people to get out at the speed that the fire made through that neighborhood last month. So having had that experience, it's still pretty fresh for a lot of people in the Illinois Valley. I have a concern, I think that might have been expressed here to some extent by the Community Services Division of the state. I have a concern about putting another 7 cars that need to get out at the end of a one-lane road when our county is already pretty stretched for fighting wildfires. And so I think that this might merit, I don't want to seem like I'm against development, because that's not the case. But I would like to know that the development was not just ran through, because so many are, that if it were possible to have all of the safety concerns that, I mean, fire safety, it's not, the fire hazard in our communities is not gonna go away anytime soon. I do have a concern about adding to that public water supply given existing standard water usages. I know that it's probably a neighborhood with a lot of great water, but I have an interest in how that water supply in each of these pocket neighborhoods influences the contribution to the public water supply. And I would like to see that addressed. I think that the applicant has done a good job here, and I don't mean to be critical, but I'd like to see that perhaps addressed more deeply at the level of the, I'm still learning whether it's the code or comprehensive plan. But I want to invite you to consider that adding more pocket developments into an area that the term is already impacted, and that's why it's not deer habitat, but the it's right there, obviously freshly drawn. So I'm not saying that it's going to harm deer, but I want us to think about what development means, perhaps, and does it, like, do we have to make homes out of flammable things? That would go a long way, wouldn't it, if our homes weren't going to burn up when the fire came through. So I just see the potential for there being hazards here that does put a pressure on our public safety resources, which are already stretched so thin. That would be a difficult area, for example, for law enforcement, should we ever have any, to get to. And I think we can do better than this. I think spreading people out across the landscape isn't the only way to go. And we can have protect our open spaces and the beautiful rural character of our landscapes, places people love to live in and down dirt roads. And so I would like to see, to be honest, this is neither farm nor forest land. And I'm sorry that the code makes the applicants work so hard on those issues when it seems to me what you have here is some very special rural land character that really deserves to be protected. And so I want to say I'm not against this development, but I'm not encouraged by the level of additional risk that it offers to the county.
Thank you. Commissioner Brokaw.
I've also studied the report and thought a lot about it. I happen to live on a dead-end road that has 5-acre tracts. We have 20 homes on our dead-end road. And I actually think that the safety of the people with regard to fire will be improved by approving this request. The 20 homes on our dead-end street would not have any trouble getting out because it is a 2-lane road, so they'd get out. And I think all of the conditions have been adequately met and all my concerns have been met, so I am supportive of the request.
All right. I find that this land is not forest land. I think that has been adequately proved. I think it has been adequately proved that this land is not necessary for the forest production on adjacent lands, because BLM on the north is not managing this land for forest. It says it cannot be managed for commercial forestry and is only managing it for fire. The land to the south is not being managed for forest. In fact, it has been determined also to be non-forest land. I find that this land is not agricultural land. The soil survey certainly indicates that, and that soil survey agrees with the soil survey and comprehensive plan, which is this is not agricultural land. In terms of carrying capacity, I find that the wells are in the area are more than adequate. Even 18 gallons per minute exceeds by 6 times the well requirements for an individual home. So it seems like you have to have really good water in this area. Much better than I have. And I thought mine was pretty good at 11. I find that the septic carrying capacity has also been adequately addressed by the soil scientist. I find that the roads system has been more than adequately addressed. As Mr. King noted, this will actually make it safer for the entire neighborhood and all of the neighbors by taking out replacing a 1-lane dirt gravel road with a 2-lane paved road that must meet all of the fire requirements in terms of the diameter of the turning circles and the visibility. This road will be required to be up to fire standards so that there can be 2-way traffic going in and out. And that will, it seems, not only serve the development, but will also serve the entire neighborhood in improving that. Mrs. Moniz expressed concern about the grades close to the road. This was addressed by both the cemetery and the Public Works Department. The Public Works Department actually said that they would not touch it if there were any grades even within the right-of-way around the road that could be impacted. And they're very, very particular about that. So I
being extending rural residential zoning into a predominantly forested area and woodlot resource zoning, it's already been adequately demonstrated that neither this property nor the adjoining properties that are zoned woodlot resource are actually forest capable properties. In terms of increasing the wildfire risk, I think that the neighbors, if the wildfire risk would be increased, I think that the neighbors would be concerned about that. And instead, the neighbors are saying, we would like this to happen to help make our property safer. The DLCD says that fire plans are increasingly, inadequate. And yet fire plans are the only thing we have to do. We can't just make arbitrary decisions and say, well, there's a possibility of fire, and therefore we can't develop anything. We have to go by the code. We have to go by the fire plans. Article 76 has been developed for this purpose. And I think that this actually will make, by removing the ceanothus and the other fire hazard plants, I think that this will actually make the area more fire safe and by putting in roads and fire breaks. I find that this plan has met all the requirements and the goals, and I'm certainly in favor of supporting this plan. Also, in terms of concern about wildfires, when the actual development is done, and also the septics and the runoff and the other concerns of the rain, when the actual plan is submitted for development, they have to go through even more rigorous tests to prove that the septic capability is adequate. There's not going to be any runoff. But in terms of the cuts and the grading and for based on the type of soil that's there, they have to go through really, really rigorous investigation and tests of their plan to prove that there won't be any soil runoff.
Thank you.
And that also that they will meet the Article 76 fire code. So at this point, in terms of the rezone, I would be in favor of that. At this point, we will take a 5-minute recess.